Now we're going to take up the machlokas between the Rambam and the Raivad, which is in the end of the first parak in Hilchos Brachos. And the way the Rambam learns the Mishnah, as we said, it's a little bit strange in terms of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah seems to imply that the problem is a problem of Zimun, not a problem of Bracha per se. So the Rambam learns that it's really, of course, it's a Mufka from Zimun, but that's because forbidden foods are not fit for blessings. So if a person is eating forbidden foods, he doesn't make a Bracha, even if he did a Peshogeg. What if it's not Peshogeg? What if it's by accident, which is not the same as shogeg? What if it's in a situation where he would be permitted to do so? As, for example, he's starving, or he's in the military, and there's no other food available, and he has to eat. So according to Halacha, there'd be no Avera. That he doesn't say. We have to try and figure that out. The Raivad critiques him on the basis of the fact, the Raivad said he made a great mistake. Because, and he sort of catches the Rambam on something which is pretty obvious. It's a very strong question. It's one thing to say the Rambam made a mistake. But to say that he just didn't get the Mishnah, that's a lot. But nevertheless, he says that. He said the Mishnah said that Ein Mezamnen. And Ein Mezamnen is a different issue, but it's lacking in Kfiyas, because it's Davar Asa. And he says it's Ke'ein Achilas Peros. Of course, this is a very good interpretation of the concept. And as we said, that's what Tosis is basically saying, because Zimun is really all about Kfiyas. So any Achila which doesn't partake of Kfiyas, There's no Zimun, there's no Tziruf, there's no Kfiyas, there's no Zimun. So that's the whole problem with Dvarim HaAsurim. That's a very, very satisfying explanation. But then he leaves with a question. Aval bracha tchila v'sof, lama lo yivarchu. But the bracha tchila v'sof, why shouldn't you say the bracha? Ha'el v'nanu, since you were nana. That's his position. When we first learned the Rambam, I raised the question. I said that from the standpoint of the Mishnah, the Raivad is smoother, clearly, more in line with the Mishnah. But from the standpoint of pure logic, there is an element that's problematical in the Raivad, and that is that, Mamarashach, if you are saying that it's fit for bracha, so there is Birchas HaMazon, so when you have three people benching together, it becomes Zimun. So then why should you draw the line at that and say, Birkas and Mazin, you have Zimun, you don't have? That's the question I raised at the time. Now I think we should be able to answer it. The answer is obvious and apparent now. Once you grasp the concept of Kfiyas, that is to say that there's a difference between Birkas HaMazon. Birkas HaMazon essentially is a bracha achrona. It's a higher form of bracha achrona, obviously. A bracha achrona for seuda, for lechem. So that's in the framework of birkas hananen, bracha before, bracha afterward. But the kviyas phenomenon is something else. Just because you're eating a seuda doesn't necessarily mean that there is a kviyas. Two distinct ideas. And the achila itself, the character of the achila has to partake of the element of kviyas. And if the character of the achila is such that it's forbidden, so then that's not, how could that be kviyas? It's forbidden. It's transitory, whatever. You're breaking the law. An activity like that is not something which is permanent. It's an accidental type of phenomenon. An accidental type of phenomenon is contrary to the very notion of kviyas. So that achila doesn't have the character of kviyas. That's essentially what we were saying yesterday about Tosfos. And once you take such a position, so the question that I raised is dissolved. It's not a question. So the Raivad is on very solid footing. Now, of course, we want to understand the Machlokas. So what's the Rambam's position? The Raivad has said that the only problem with these foods is that since there's the element of Isser is in the character of the Achila, so you can't say that that's Kviyas. By definition, it's not Kviyas. But when you have a person eating it on his own, so then you have a situation of ambivalence. What's the ambivalence? The ambivalence is that the person can be doing the wrong thing. He can be doing an Avera. And at the same time, he can be doing a mitzvah. I believe that most people on an emotional level would say, you don't make a bracha. How can you make a bracha? You're involved in an Avera. But there's ambivalence. True, with regard to eating forbidden foods, that's an avera. With regard to eating without a bracha, that's something else. That's a mitzvah. Is that possible? That's the question. I mean, in general, obviously, of course, a person can be very ambivalent. No one's perfect. No one keeps all the mitzvahs completely, and so on and so forth. So you can have a situation like that. The question is, with regard to this, with regard to where it comes together, so to speak, the very act of eating is an avera, and you're making a bracha over that very act. So that's what the question is. So now it's being suggested that perhaps the Rambam is in a bit of a contradiction, given what he himself has said concerning the requirements for Birkas Hananen. If you go back to the beginning of the Perek, Halacha Beis, for example, and we did raise Sofrim, Levarech al Kalmach al Tchila, V'yach Kach Yehenem Mimeno. The reason the Rambam says Midivrei Sofrim is because, in Halacha Aleph, he mentions that the Mitzvah Seh Midiyaraisa, the Chi of Diyaraisa, with regard to Brachos, is Birkas Hamazon, where a person ate Kedei Sfiyas, when a person was Soveya, with the bread, so then it's V'yachalta V'savatu V'erachta. That's the only bracha, at least in this arena, which is Diyaraisa. Then he says, Midravanan. Ravanan decreed to make a bracha before you eat any food. V'yachkach yehenem mimeno. And afterwards, to be nana from it. And then he says, Afilu neskavin lecho lo lishtos kol shehu. Mevarach v'yachkach yehenem. There's a difference between the bracha rishona and the bracha achrona. As everybody knows, the bracha achrona is only if you ate at least a kazayas, or if you drank a revius. But with regard to bracha rishona, even a crumb, whatever the slightest amount that you intend to eat, you have to make a bracha. And then he goes on to reach tov, the blessing you make when you smell pleasant fragrances. Then he says something very important. V'chol hanene below bracha ma'al. And whoever derives the hana'ah without the bracha, it's equivalent to me'ila. Me'ila is when a person misappropriates an object that belongs to Hegdish. So in a sense, it's theft, is what he's saying. You have no rishus. Interestingly enough, it would seem then that there are two aspects to bracha. There's a positive, there's a chi of bracha. When a person wants to eat food, there's a chi of bracha. Yechayev levarech. That's one idea. There are many different phenomena in the world that generate the obligation to make a bracha. As you well know, lightning, thunder, you see the great sea, great mountains, there's many situations. You hear good news, many situations where there's a chi of bracha. But it doesn't say that if you fail to make the bracha, that it's like in your mom. The person has good news and he doesn't make the bracha of atov v'hametiv, so he failed to fulfill his chi of bracha. But it's not like he was moel, like he took something he didn't have a right to take. Can't say that. So the other Ram is adding an additional point, that it's an isser. It's an isser to partake of food, to be nana, from God's creations without a bracha, me'ila. Then he says, V'chein v'divrei sofrim levarech achar kol masha yochal v'chol masha yishteh. V'hu she yishteh revius. Then he says, moreover, the bracha achronos, the blessings you say afterwards, and that's provided that you had the shear, you ate kashir of kazayas or avias. All right, then he mentions that mita'emes, someone who's just tasting something, does not require bracha neither before nor after. That is when you don't, your intention is not to be nana, you just want to taste, like you're preparing some food or sauce, whatever, and you're just putting it in your mouth to taste it, but not to eat it. So that does not require bracha. While we're on the subject, doesn't hurt to learn the next two halachos, just because it creates a certain general overview of brachos. Then he says in Allah Gimel, K'shem shemavarchin al hahanoya, kach mavarchin al kol mitzvah mitzvah. Just like one blesses on hana, so too one blesses on each mitzvah, v'yach kach yasa osa. And then afterwards he performs the mitzvah. What's interesting over here is the k'shem, just like, as though there is a certain kind of a similarity between the two. Now the Rav used to say, he used to explain that his interpretation was that just like the bracha, when it comes to achila, creates a matir. It's matir. It's not just a chiyuv bracha, as we said. There's two ideas. One, there's a chiyuv bracha, and B, there's a matir. There's an isra achila without a bracha. So two, you have the same idea, although it sounds strange, that to do the mitzvah requires a matir, which sounds ironic. Or on the one hand, you're commanded to do it. On the other hand, so to speak, there's a certain type of an isser to do it without a bracha. That's what he wanted to say. That's actually what he said. I mean, he said it in many different contexts. All right, I'm just bringing it to your attention. It's a difficult idea to deal with.
I'm writing this
one. We're not going into now the question of Birkos HaMitzvah, which mitzvahs require and which don't. Obviously, there are certain mitzvahs when you give tzedakah, you don't make a bracha. Certain types of mitzvahs, when you do kibud aviyem, you don't make a bracha. That's a different kind of a thing. Generally speaking, we're talking about a bracha that has a particular tzura, a specific maisa mitzvah, a specific form. The ones we're all familiar with, we're putting on tefillin and talis, and the lulav, matzah, and so forth. Those types of mitzvahs. So we're not going into that question right now. That's a different issue. But where the mitzvah, the asiyas mitzvah, the maisa mitzvah, calls for a bracha, so the Rav, based upon this language, explained that conceptually, it functions the same way. Now that requires further elucidation and explanation. I'm just bringing it to your attention. Then he says, "Ubrachos rabos tiknu chachamim," and the chachamim were masakein in many brachos, derech shevach v'hodaya, in the framework of praise and thanksgiving, v'derech bakasha, and derech bakasha. For example, bakasha would be like tefilas haderech, so it's bakasha. It's not just praising God. Of course, every time, any prayer involves praise of God, but sometimes the essence is to recite a bakasha, a request. Kedei, what's the purpose for this whole system of brachos? Is kedei liskor sabari tamid, in order to remember the Creator constantly. Afal pisha lo nana v'lo asa mitzvah. Even though he was not nana, even though he didn't do a mitzvah, but it's so important in the conduct of a person's daily life to have the idea of the Creator constantly before him, so that they extended the idea and different phenomena that a person occurs. I mean, it's not just arbitrary, a person just can't go around making brachas. But certain phenomena that cause us to, certain phenomena that cause a person to reflect upon the greatness of the Creator and the wisdom of the Creator as manifested in the world around him. But the real purpose of all that is that we should be cognizant. That idea of God should be constantly before our eyes. It goes without saying that the necessity for this is because of the fact that most people get caught up in the minutia, in the illusions, and they fail to see the real truth. That everything is a manifestation of the creator. And you have to exist properly, you have to have that idea constantly in the forefront of your consciousness. Nimsu, thus it turns out that kol ha-brachos kulon shloshim minim. This is important. That see, the Rambam categorizes the brachos. It's always important when you learn about different phenomena to try and put them into categories. So there are three types, three species. Birkos hanaya, the blessings of hanaya, which is to say, when you derive hana, either achila or pleasant fragrances. Ubirkos mitzvos, blessings that are said prior to the performance of mitzvos. Ubirkos hodah, and blessings of thanksgiving. Shehein derech shevach v'hodaya, that are in the manner of shevach and hodaya. Uvakasha, those three. Because you could have a bracha which is exclusively shevach, you could have one which is exclusively hodaya, and you could have one which is bakasha. Why? Kedei liskor es habore tamid, in order to remember the Creator constantly. Uliyira mimeno, and to fear Him. So of course it's not just a neutral type of remembering. This doesn't make any sense, but it's to drive home the idea of God and one's place in the universe, where you stand in relationship to God, the fear of God, constantly. Then we'll do just one more halacha, because that's important. V'nusach kol ha-brachos Ezra uveis dino tiknum, and the format, the wording of the bracha, who formulated them? Obviously, they're not from Sinai, as he said, they're derabanan. So that's Ezra and his beznin, which of course takes place between the first exile and the return. V'ein roi l'shanosam, and it is not appropriate to change them. V'lo l'hosef al achas mehem, or to add to any one of them. V'lo l'grow mimeno, or to detract. V'chol ha'mashana mimad be'a shetavu chachamim v'brachos, and whoever changes the form that the chachamim arranged in brachos, eino elotoa, is in error, is making a mistake. V'chol bracha she'ein bo haskaras Hashem u'malchus, and any bracha which doesn't mention God's name, u'malchus, that is melech ha'olam, that God is the king of the universe, ain't a bracha. It's not a bracha. Elam kein ha'isa smuch al-chaverta, unless it's smuch al-chaverta. That is to say, juxtaposed, it comes in conjunction with another bracha. That's a separate concept of bracha smuch al-chaverta, which we will be returning to in this parak. Now the question that's being raised is, isn't the Rambam undercutting his own position? Because the Rambam has stated clearly, not just that there's a chiyuv bracha. That's a good observation, by the way. Had the Rambam merely stated there's a chiyuv bracha, you see the point that I made before, that there's, if you study the Rambam carefully, you'll notice he's saying two things. A, chiyuv bracha. B, isur achila, isur hanach, without bracha. If you just overlook that point, then you really wouldn't have a case against the Rambam over here. Because if you learn merely that it's a chiyuv bracha, so then when the Rambam told you that these foods, one does not make a bracha, so that's not a problem. So then you say, this is not appropriate for a bracha. That's it. Because a person is eating something which God commanded you not to eat, so there's no bracha over here. That would be one thing. But if you say that there are two things, in addition to chiyuv bracha, there's isur hana, so then what do you do about the isur hana over here? It is it's something that a person is deriving hana from. You can't say it's not hana. No one's going to go that far and posit an idea that since it's prohibited, it's therefore by definition it's not an object of hana. I don't think anyone's going to say that. I hope nobody takes that. Being suggested that there's a distinction between whether you say the bracha is on the hana or the bracha is on the achila, which would be the activity which produces the achila. That to me is a very difficult approach here. If you're dealing with mitzvos, where the mitzvos have different aspects to them, sometimes it's the maisa ha-mitzvah, that the bracha relates to the maisa, the action of the mitzvah. Well, sometimes the bracha clearly is referring not to the maisa, but to the kiyum ha-mitzvah, and so on. So then, the question would be, what is the aspect of the mitzvah? Here it's a different kind of a phenomenon. It is It is rather that before your nana, you can't be nana unless you made the bracha. So it's again, it's on the hana, but if you want to isolate it any further than that and separate the actual hana from the achila, it's going to get very difficult. For example, what is the hana that you're talking about? If the person, is it the hana like the nutritional aspect? Well, what's the pleasure? For example, let's say you take the food and you grind it up and you put it in some kind of a capsule and you swallow the capsule. And then inside your system, you know, you start to feel the effect. You feel better. Would you make a bracha then? Why not? Because there was no achila. Right? So you got to have achila. So it's, and of course, the achila itself must be an achila. In order to be achila, it must be an activity which produces a certain hana. Hana is achila. So it's really one thing. It's the hana is achila. So therefore, whenever you experience hana is achila, that must be preceded by a bracha. They're both agreeing on that. Because when we talk about nana, we're not talking about the nana of the fragrance. There it's when you smell the fragrance. Here we're talking about hana. It's hana sachila. That's the hana. I mean, any other way of deriving, you could derive any kind of hana from treif. As long as it's not achila, obviously. You know, the fats and whatever, you could use it for your skin, whatever you want to say. And if you inject it, if you find some way of injecting the nutritional aspect of it into your system and it provides nutritional benefit and you sustain yourself on it, that's no issur at all. Because it's not derech achila. It's only us at derech achila. If a person takes some kind of an IV, ingests the food somehow or other, through an IV, there'd be no bracha, even though he's deriving the benefit, if you want to say hana is benefit, and it wouldn't be considered achila, and you wouldn't violate Yom Kippur, and so on down the line, because that's not achila. So therefore, there's no argument as to what you're making the bracha on. Rather, we have to say that the achila is defined as a hana activity. If a person would eat in such a manner that it would preclude on us, then it wouldn't be achila. The person takes all the stuff and puts it into some kind of a capsule and swallows it that way, and inside of his stomach the capsule dissolves and the food content comes out and provides nutrition. That wouldn't be achila, even though it went down his throat. Not everything that goes down your throat is achila. It's got to be food. If a person chews paper and swallows it, it's not achila. The other approach is to take this idea that we said in the name of the Rav. Well, no, this point, I'm sorry, this point is not the Rav, this is the Rambam himself. Let's get it clear, the Rambam himself is saying it functions as a mater. That's not a theory, that's what he's saying. The Rav wanted to extend that concept to Pirkei Avos Mitzvos, and that's perhaps controversial, but that's not relevant to the case. Okay, so given that the Rambam says clearly that it's not just bracha, but it's an Isser Me'ilah, so how does that help you in terms of the machlok? So it's being suggested that the Rambam is not that difficult to understand, because once we understand that the bracha has a function, it has a purpose attached to it. And the objective of the bracha, it's not just the chiyuv bracha, but the objective is to render it into something which is mutter. So that presupposes that everything else that would render it into being something which is mutter is already in place. It's just lacking one thing. It's lacking bracha. But with regard to something which is usur, which is unfit for Jewish consumption, so that there's no bracha. There's no bracha. Because you can't create the heter. It's usur, remains usur. So you'll ask me, so what about the factor of Me'ilah? What about that? I raised that question before. In addition, then, to the Issur Achila, what about the factor of Me'ilah? What does he do about that? One could say as follows. One could say that you can't make a bracha according to the Rambam. There is no bracha. So it's a bracha levatala. And therefore, you can't make a bracha. So then there's two possible results from that. Either we'll say that, so then don't eat treif. You know, if you eat treif, so not only are you over the isser of eating treif, but you're also moel because you had no heter to eat. Insofar as you know, you can't deny that there's an ah. Or perhaps it's being suggested that the isser me'ilah is only where there is a situation of bracha, where there's a chi of bracha, and you fail to make the bracha, so then it's me'ilah. But if there's no bracha, so then there's no me'ilah. All right, I could consider such a thought. But the truth of the matter is, what's the difference? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore whether you say that this person is a moel or he's not a moel. Whatever the case is, you can't make the bracha. And that's the Rambam's position. Now, what's the Raiva's position? A question is being raised against this whole approach, based on the fact that this approach is structured on the idea of the matir that would seem to be fine with regard to the first bracha. But with regard to the second bracha, the bracha achrona, when you've already consumed it, according to this, if it's just an issue of matir, so then you should make the bracha achrona. The bracha vishana you can't make. You're disqualified because it has to serve as a matir and there's no matir. But the bracha achrona, which does not seem on the surface to be of the same kind, to be the matir, so that should be okay according to this theory. But yet the Rambam says you don't make a bracha achrona either. For starters, it seems that the Raivat's position is easier. And we could start that way. The Raivat's position is easier in the sense that he's saying there's two separate things over here. One is that there's an isser. It's true that this food is asur, and it's very, very serious isser. However, the idea of the bracha is completely removed. It's separate from the isser of whether the food is mutter or whether it's asur. It's two separate things. The idea of the bracha is that when you get into that this is an object which provides nutrition. As far as that's concerned, and that is to say that you can't, you have to look at the object in two frameworks. One in the framework of the Torah, mutter or asur. Another in the framework of reality. It's food. In that framework, it's just food. And food provides hanah. And to, when you have hanah of food, in the generic sense, you have to make a bracha. So it's two separate things. And he would agree that isur me'ilah. And if you don't, so then you're moel, because to the extent that you partook of God's food without the bracha, to that extent you're moel. Yeah, so an idea that's being suggested, I think this is the approach in the Rambam, is you can look at it in a different way, and the Rambam would make more sense, and that is, what kind of bracha is this? How can the guy be a mevarach? It's tarit d'sasri. It's contradictory. On the one hand, he's disobeying God. He's negating God, and then he's blessing him at the same time. It seems like to fit into the language of ein zeh mevarach ela me'ayit. What kind of bracha is this? The activity is such that it's contradictory to the whole idea of God. Let me repeat, the Rambam is on very solid grounds if you look at it from a different perspective. And then you don't have to get into these hair-splitting issues. It creates a matir, and this, even afterwards it doesn't create a matir, and so on and so forth. I mean, that's going to be difficult. But it's very simple. What kind of bracha is this? Where's the key in bracha? It's a sheker. It's false. There is that idea, by the way. You can't have a bracha if it's sheker. For example, the Gemara in Pesachim says, with regard to the bracha of Dayan HaEmes, when someone experiences a loss, so they have to say Baruch Dayan Ha'emes. Baruch Hashem, you know, Hashem Malchus. That's called Tzidek Adin, to affirm the righteousness of God's justice. But the Gemara says, La'asad Lavo, in the future, Yimosa Mashiach, in the future, in Olam Haba, whatever. So there'll only be one bracha. Atov HaMetiv. He says, nah, there's two brachas. For good tidings, you say Atov HaMetiv. For so-called bad tidings, you say Adayin HaEmes. But the La'asad Lavo, there'll only be one bracha. Atov HaMetiv. Why? Because the truth is that whatever happens is part of God's plan, so it's good. There's nothing wrong, there's nothing evil about Misa. People have a misconception. It's because we're completely attached to the idea of physical existence. It's hard for us to recognize that there's a higher form of existence. So in our emotional framework, we view it as an evil. But it's not. It's part of God's design, part of God's plan to create a being of Adam who exists in a physical framework, but within him has this Tzelem Elokim and has the capacity to perfect it. And then when he removes himself from this world and he goes to Olam Haba, that's a infinitely better state of existence. So that what's the evil? It's good. Person lived his life correctly, and now he's moving on. It's not an evil. So Tatova Meitiv. It's an occasion which brings forth praise. So if that's the case, so why don't we say it now? Well, why are we involved in this ambivalence, so to speak, type of bracha, but have Diana Emes? The answer is because you can't state a bracha if it's going to be sheker. That's not the way we are. The way we are, this is the reality of human existence, that the very few people are on that plane. The most you can expect is that the person can have a recognition that there's a righteousness. Dynamis. But to actually, Atova Meitiv, to say this is a good thing, in our framework, we don't mean it. It would be false. It would be sheker. So, but La'asad Lava, when we achieve a certain degree of perfection and the abstract truth, our emotions will be in line with the truth, and we'll actually be able to experience it as Tov, so then not Tov and Meitiv. You won't have to say Tzidek HaDin anymore. We'll be beyond that. We'll see the goodness. So therefore you see that a bracha can't be sheker. So it's tied to the sasri. The person's involved in Isser, and he's praising God. What kind of thing is this? Of course, I can't just leave it at that. Now, well, you got to go back to the other side of the family. Well, what's the rabbi going to say to that? So, yeah, well, once you elucidate one side, and if it makes sense, then the next thing you do is, well, go to the other side. So what does he say about that? Until you get to the point where this is where they differ. That's where we're up to about that point now. This would also explain the issue that was raised before by Nissan, that you have to explain the Rambam not just in terms of the first bracha, which is Matir, but also the bracha Chrona. This would explain both. It seems to me that it boils down to that issue as to whether this is a bracha or not a bracha. Because you can't avoid this question. The bracha can't be sheker. That's an absurdity. For example, Who can you give a bracha to in shul on Shabbos? Who can you call up for an aliyah? People that don't keep the Torah. People that don't believe in anything. Well, where do you draw the line? These are serious issues. Or at a bar mitzvah, they'll honor someone with hamotzi or something like that. But in many of these families, you have people that are not observant at all. They learn, you know, when the Hebrew school had to say motzi. To me, the basic thing is if they believe what they're saying. If a person doesn't believe in God, doesn't believe in the Creator, and there are people out there like that, but still he's part of the family and in tradition, he wants to get up and be honored and say the blessing, which has absolutely no meaning, praising the God that he doesn't believe in, so then, no, he can't do it. My minimal requirement is that at least the person believes in the existence of God and that God is the Creator. So he's saying, God is Moshe Lechem and Aris. If he doesn't believe in that, then I won't let him get a bracha. Because it's sheker. That's the question. Is this a bracha or is it not a bracha? It all depends upon the framework. I think that's what the Raivad is saying. I think everybody was grappling with that idea. If you go back and review all the different ideas that were suggested, we're trying to grapple with that idea. What's the framework here? And in terms of the framework of the recognition that God is the Borei Olam, that God is the creator and God is the source of this food, which is providing Hana, that's the framework. If that's the framework, it's irrelevant. The issue that this specific commandments that apply to you, in other words, if you're looking at it from the so-called universal framework, it's true. Everything he's saying is true. He's praising God. He has that recognition. But there's another framework in which we as Jews recognize God. That is the framework of the revelation of the Torah. Of the system, of the bris, of the covenant, permitted and prohibited. There's another framework to take into consideration. So now the question is, whether the validity of the bracha is measured, in which framework are you talking about? If it's measured in terms of the particular framework that we relate to God, not only as the Borei Olam, but as the one who is the Gnosei HaTorah, and commanded us to refrain from this activity, if that's the framework in which the truthfulness, in which the shevach of the bracha has to emerge, so then you can't make a bracha on this, because it's a negation, it's a denial. It's a tie to the sashvi to bracha. So then, you're right, this chefza, so to speak, will be puzzle for bracha. Or those in YU, if you wanted to say that it's not l'shem bracha, fine, I mean, I'm putting it into a different context. Then all of that becomes true. Yeah, you're right, it has to be l'shem bracha, but not because there's a category of l'shem bracha, it simply has to be a bracha, but the bracha has to emerge not just in the universal framework, but it has to emerge in the framework of the system that we live by. That's the system that we live by. So in that, within that system, this is a prohibition. This is a denial. To the extent that every Avera denies God, so then he's involved in denying God. You can't be affirming God and denying God at the same time. If that's the framework. But if the framework is merely one, which was designed purely with regard to the objective in mind, the Hana per se, that's all we're talking about. We're only talking about acknowledging that this Hana comes from God in a universal framework, which is the Raivat's position, so then you make a bracha. It's two separate ideas. You're over the Avera of the prohibition. But that prohibition does not come into the picture with regard to the bracha, because the bracha is not constructed within that framework. Yeah. There, according to the Rambam, the explanation of Ein Zeh Mevarech Ela Menayitz is perfect. That's exactly what we're saying, that it's not a bracha, but Menayitz, it's to the contrary, it's a defamation. It's blasphemy. How can you make a bracha? It's even more chutzpah. Hey, you're being disobedient and you're making a bracha? That fits in perfectly with the Lashon approach.